Episode 3 of Behind the Line. I am your host, KC. Follow me on Twitter at KC_BTL84. Hit the subscribe button down below. Hit the like. Trying to grow this channel. Anything you can do to support would be appreciated. We've got a lot going on in the world of sports. We got the NFL season kicking off with the Bears-Packers tonight. I'm watching it as we speak. By the time you hear this tomorrow, the game will be over. Hopefully the Packers will have won and covered my bet. But once again, we got news out of Dallas. So, yesterday, Zeke finally got his contract extension. Now, Jerry Jones finally acquiesced, gave him $15 million per year, $50 million guaranteed, makes Zeke the highest paid running back in the NFL. Couple of things that I noticed about this, I wanted to go over. The first thing is, why did this take so long? Now, I understand keeping Zeke away from training camp. You don't want to risk unnecessary injury. We all know that the preseason's fucking useless anyway. You know, the veteran players, they don't need the preseason. Like we've said on this podcast before, the month of September is pretty much treated as a preseason to most of these NFL teams anyway. So if keeping him out of training camp was the reason that this took so long, to me that just doesn't make sense. Because all we've heard about since training camp began, out of Dallas anyway, and nationally, is about Zeke and his contract situation. He was holding out in Cabo San Lucas training. You know, we talked about on Tuesday how this has a negative impact on the locker room. You know, Ezekiel Elliott's fellow players constantly having to answer questions about him. Jerry Jones constantly answering questions about him. Now, going into the year, you still got contract situations in Dallas. Amari Cooper is wanting a new deal. Everybody knows Dak Prescott deserves a new deal. Dak Prescott is in line to make 700 fucking grand this year. Way underpaid. I don't think he's worth the $40 million he's asking for, but he's obviously worth more than $700,000. The thing of it is right now, it's a mess in Dallas. It's a complete mess with all these contract situations going on. I don't understand why you don't just get the deals done and move forward with the season. Now, I know you have the salary cap to deal with. I understand all that. But with this Ezekiel Elliott situation, the salary cap really is not an issue if you're waiting until next year to give Dak his extension. The salary cap's not an issue for this year anyway. You know, I read something the other day where Jerry Jones made, it was either $42 or $62 million in one day on some oil deal. It's fucking crazy money. The reason I bring that up is because Jerry Jones came out after the Zeke situation and was talking about all the money that he has spent on the Cowboys and the players. The motherfucker made $62 million in one day. I don't want to fucking hear about the money you're spending on the most valuable sports franchise in the country. Anyway, so number two, back to Zeke's contract. Another thing that I noticed, in my opinion, this contract is an indictment on how Jerry Jones views Dak Prescott. Now, I've said this several times since this podcast began last week that Dak Prescott is a third-tier quarterback in the NFL. There's no debate about it. No debate about it. Now, the Cowboys opened the season with a tremendously easy schedule. Yet, it seems like Jerry knew that without Zeke, they weren't going to come out of the month of September 3-1 or even 4-0. More than likely, it was going to be 2-2. And Jerry knows that Dak Prescott isn't good enough to carry this Cowboys team on his own. Now, if you don't believe that, look at what's happening in Los Angeles with Melvin Gordon. Melvin Gordon is a top three running back in the NFL. He wants his money. He wants his money right fucking now. Wants his contract extension. He's 2 years older than Zeke. Same situation that Ezekiel Elliott was in. But the difference is the Chargers have Phillip Rivers under center and not Dak Prescott. The Chargers have a future Hall of Fame quarterback that is a proven winner in this league. Rivers is a top 10 quarterback in the NFL. Gordon's role on the offense, don't get me twisted when I say this, Gordon is instrumental to the Chargers' offense. But his role is not as critical as Ezekiel Elliott's role is in Dallas. So what do the Chargers do? They call Gordon's bluff. They give him permission to go out and seek a trade, knowing damn fucking well that he isn't going anywhere in 2019. He's either going to play out his contract or he's going to sit out the fucking season and not make a fucking dime. This last part, I found this really interesting. When the contract extension for Zeke was announced, the Dallas Cowboys Super Bowl odds did not change. Las Vegas right now has the odds for the Cowboys to win the Super Bowl at plus 2,100. So for you people that don't bet out there, what that pretty much means is you can put $100 on the Cowboys today. If they win the Super Bowl in February, they pay you out $2,800. Not a bad bet, you know, if you think the Cowboys are going to win the Super Bowl. Not going to fucking happen. You're just wasting $100. But why is that? Why have the Super Bowl odds not changed? I mean, I've been talking about how critical Zeke is to the Cowboys' offense. You figure if Dallas brings him back into the fold, gives him an extension, that the Cowboys are going to be better off. The Super Bowl odds should go down. Now, it's true that Zeke is critical to the Cowboys' offense. But that's because the Cowboys' offense is pedestrian without Ezekiel Elliott. So with Elliott returning for week one, you would figure the Dallas odds would improve. But I believe it's more an indictment on the mediocrity of Dak Prescott at quarterback. Just like me, just like Pro Football Focus, just like a lot of others, Las Vegas does not believe in Dak Prescott. Running backs don't shift point spreads in the NFL. And running backs don't win Super Bowls. It's a proven fact. Barry Sanders, best running back that this league has ever seen, never won a fucking Super Bowl. Barely made the playoffs a couple of times in his career before he graciously bowed out of Detroit. Elite NFL teams don't pay top dollar for running backs for this very reason. If you don't believe me, go back to last season and look at the top paid running backs in the NFL. I've done the favor for you. LeSean McCoy in Buffalo was the highest paid running back in the league. Todd Gurley with the Rams, second. Ezekiel Elliott, Lamar Miller, Leonard Fournette, Jared McKinnon, Saquon Barkley, Mark Ingram, Latavius Murray, and David Johnson. Top 10 paid running backs in the NFL in 2018. Six of those teams didn't make the fucking playoffs last year. Saquon Barkley was one of the top running backs in the NFL. The fucker was Rookie of the Year. How far did that get the New York Giants? Nowhere. Because Eli Manning was a fucking dumpster fire last year. Has been for the past several seasons. Saquon Barkley's impact was limited. Now, you can make the argument that three of the top four paid running backs last year were on teams who made the playoffs. Houston and Los Angeles had second-tier quarterbacks under center, though. You think that the Houston Texans are making the playoffs last year without Deshaun Watson? If you put fucking Ryan Fitzpatrick on the Texans last year with Lamar Miller running the ball, they're not making the fucking playoffs. They're 6-10. Deshaun Watson was the difference maker. Same with the Rams. The Rams' success is on the shoulders of Jared Goff and Sean McVay. You take Todd Gurley out of that equation, you put someone in like a Mark Ingram, and the Rams have the same offense that they do right now. Take New Orleans, for example. The Saints have been a playoff team the last two seasons. One play away from the NFC Championship game in 2017 when Stephon Diggs caught that Minnesota miracle that really the Saints fucked up on their own. And one play away from the Super Bowl last year. Running back Mark Ingram was a huge, huge factor in 2017 and 2018. Great locker room presence. He had a career year in 2017. He was suspended for the first four games of last year. His numbers were down in 2018, but his presence in the locker room was still a big factor. Yet, he was actually overpaid in terms of his value to the offense. So what do the Saints do? They do what elite teams in the NFL do. They let Ingram and his nearly $6 million a year salary head off to Baltimore. Picked up Latavius Murray in free agency, paid him a third of the amount that they were paying Mark Ingram to fill that void. At this point, Alvin Kamara is way more fucking valuable to the Saints offense than Mark Ingram is. And he's still on his rookie deal. Just over $1 million he's going to make this season. To me, that is smart management. That's what the elite teams in the NFL do. They don't go out and overpay for running backs. Running backs are expendable in the NFL. I mean, we've seen it time and time again. That's why the Chargers refused to budge with Melvin Gordon. That's why the Steelers last year refused to budge with Le'Veon Bell. Now, I'm not taking away the importance of Zeke in Dallas, but it just further proves my point that Dak Prescott isn't the quarterback in this league that can hoist a team on his shoulders and lead them into the playoffs in January. Now, just for shits and giggles, guess where New England landed on the list? Top paid running backs in the league. New England had the 23rd best running back or highest paid running back in the league last year. Why? Because they don't value running backs. You look at the last 10 years, it seems like New England cycles them in and out every other season. Yet, they're contending for Super Bowls every year because they allocate their money to the key positions that matter. Defensive end, linebacker, quarterback, offensive line. They don't waste their money on running backs. Now, let me tell you the difference between a high-drama organization like Dallas and a well-run franchise like the Rams. Dallas is a major city. There's no doubt about it. Top five, top eight media market in the country. But Los Angeles is the entertainment capital of the world. Second biggest media market in America. You got Hollywood. You got the paparazzi everywhere. Yet we didn't hear a peep from the Los Angeles Rams, or Jared Goff for that matter, regarding his contract extension. Hell, it surprised me when ESPN sent the alert to my phone that he had signed a four-year, $134 million extension earlier this week. $110 million guaranteed. I didn't even realize they were negotiating. Now, how is it possible that the franchise located in the second biggest media market in America can keep these negotiations private? Yet the Dallas Cowboys seem to reveal every nuance about every player's contract situation on that roster. Like I said earlier, it's debilitating to the locker room. Other players don't want to constantly hear or be asked about this type of stuff. At the end of the day, it really doesn't matter. They don't care if Zeke's getting his money or not. I'm sure they're happy for him if he does. But it doesn't affect their contract one way or the other. But it does affect morale of the team and the product of the field on the field they put on Sunday. Take a look at last year's championship games. Four teams that were in it: New England, New Orleans, Kansas City, the Rams. What do they all have in common? Everything stays in-house. You don't hear a peep out of the New England Patriots locker room. You don't hear a fucking word out of Bill Belichick. Somebody asked him on Saturday if one of his players is playing on Sunday. He's questionable. Everybody on that roster is questionable every fucking week of the year. You don't hear nothing out of them. The Saints, when training camp began, had the whole Michael Thomas contract situation going on. They settled that shit with a fucking quickness. Because Sean Payton and them knew that dragging it out would ruin camp. Which is when the team is supposed to be building cohesiveness to go into the year. Now you take other teams like the Cleveland Browns, or the Cowboys for that matter, who, since I'm just jumping all over them right now. Always in the media. When a player fucking farts in Dallas, we hear about it. The Browns, they've been a disaster my entire life. Cowboys have been a disaster the last quarter century. And they also have another thing in common, because both of those teams will be watching the playoffs from their fucking couch in January. Now, before I get to the college football bets for this week, I wanted to briefly touch on the Antonio Brown situation that's going on out in Oakland. Came out earlier today, this is Thursday when I'm recording this, that the Raiders have fined Antonio Brown $54,000 since training camp began for various infractions. Now, it's being reported that after a heated argument with Raiders general manager Mike Mayock, that the team is preparing to suspend AB. Now, the suspension hasn't been handed down, as of the time I'm recording this anyway, but that's not really what I wanted to get into anyway. To me, the suspension right now is irrelevant. It's irrelevant. In my opinion, all of this was predictable. Which is the reason that the Steelers accepted so little in return from Oakland to ship AB out there. They sent a third and a fifth round pick. That's it. For one of the best wide receivers in the NFL. Two draft picks. Why? Well, because AB was a consistent cancer last season in the locker room. Now, Big Ben, him and Big Ben had all kinds of sorts of fucking problems last year. The best quarterback wide receiver duo this league has seen, perhaps ever. Couldn't get along. Now, Big Ben wasn't perfect by any stretch of the imagination. He had his fair share of fuck-ups. But an elite, high-maintenance quarterback is always going to be more important to a team than a diva wide receiver. We give much more leeway to guys like Big Ben, but you don't hear about him missing practices. He doesn't miss team meetings. If he does, we don't hear about it. You know, Pittsburgh will be a playoff team this season. Oakland, even with Antonio Brown, Oakland was not making the playoffs. Antonio Brown is throwing temper tantrums, throwing a football against the fence in frustration after he caught a touchdown pass in practice. The thing is, in the ultimate team game, football is the ultimate team game, Antonio Brown does everything possible to make himself stand out as an individual and not be part of the team. It's crazy to me because right now, he is at risk to cost himself $30 million. But to me, it's time for the Raiders to release Antonio Brown. You got to let him go. He's been nothing but a headache since training camp started last month. And as talented as he is, I mean, Antonio Brown is an otherworldly talent at wide receiver. But he's not fucking worth it. I mean, it's not worth all of this. The past 4 or 5 weeks, the Raiders camp has been a fucking disaster because of this. You remember Terrell Owens? What about Chad Johnson? Or that ridiculous Ocho Cinco nickname that he preferred to go by? Neither one of those guys won Super Bowls. Terrell Owens made one. I give him credit. He balled out in it. His only real success in the NFL came in Philadelphia. Donovan McNabb. Chad Johnson, the fucking Bungles, they haven't won a playoff game. I know they didn't when Marvin Lewis was there, which was the whole time Ocho Cinco was there. But the fucking Bengals, they haven't won a playoff game since the goddamn 80s. It's been proven time and again in the NFL that guys with character issues are not worth it. It wouldn't shock me in the least if Antonio Brown is out of Oakland by the end of this weekend. I do not see him suiting up in a Raiders uniform. If they let him slide on this, that locker room is going to be out of control. I can't see John Gruden standing for that. I can't see it. Now, let's get to the college football bets for this weekend. Much like last week, there's really not much to choose from this week in terms of marquee games in college football. We're still in September. This is still the hardest part of the season to bet. Hard to handicap these games when you have basically 1 week of a sample size to see what these teams have done. And 99% of the teams have played nobody so far this year. But here we go. Going to do it anyway. Texas A&M at Clemson. Clemson's minus 17.5. Now, if you bet Texas A&M last week when they played Texas State, then you ended up the day pissed off motherfucker. Texas A&M's up 41-0 and covering with 36 seconds to go, and they end up giving up a garbage touchdown late in the fourth quarter and blow the cover. Now, it's tough to gauge how good Texas A&M really is at this point in the season. I know they're ranked number 12. They certainly didn't let the look-ahead spot last week affect them, looking ahead to Clemson this week. That game with Texas State was pretty much over with by halftime, which it should have been. But to me, this game is more about Clemson and the size of this line. I was thoroughly unimpressed with Clemson last week. Now, you look at the score, yeah, they rolled Georgia Tech. It was like 52-14. It wasn't even fucking close. Easily covered the 36.5-point spread. However, Trevor Lawrence, quarterback at Clemson, he struggled bad against Georgia Tech. Worst I've seen him look. 13-23, 168 yards, 2 touchdowns, 2 interceptions. Clemson mainly had to rely on their running game, which they rushed for over 400 yards. Now, even after Clemson lost the majority of their defensive line to the NFL, the defense was stellar last week, held Georgia Tech to under 300 yards of total offense. These teams played last year in College Station. Clemson barely squeaked by with a win. Won by 2 points on the road. It kind of worries me here because last year Clemson was completely outplayed by Texas A&M. But that was a road game. Road games in college football are tough. They're tough to win. Now, I don't feel like we saw the real Clemson offense last week. I feel like Dabo Sweeney's going to have something up his sleeve. This is the home opener for them. This is a big game, one of only two big games happening this week in college football. 17.5 points is a lot of points to give up in a top 12 matchup. You would think this spread would be between 7 and 10 points, somewhere in that range. But I like Clemson here. And I normally don't like double-digit favorites. It's a hard bet. It's a hard pill to swallow. But it seems to me like Vegas loves to bait the public in college football into betting large spread dogs in big marquee games like this. Right now, 85% of the betting public is loading up on Texas A&M. The line hasn't moved at all. None. To me, that says that sharp money is on the Clemson side, evening out the bets. In the NFL, I prefer dogs. In college football, I try to take the favorites as much as I can because favorites cover a lot more in college. I'm taking Clemson here minus 17.5. This next game is my favorite game to bet this weekend. Now, this is probably going to be one of the least watched games of the weekend. BYU and Tennessee. Tennessee's favored by 3.5. Now, BYU opened at home last week against Utah. And if you just looked at the final score of that game, you would think that BYU got their fucking asses kicked. They only trailed by a field goal at halftime. Really, the only reason the game got out of hand is because BYU quarterback Zach Wilson threw 2 pick-sixes in the second half. Blew the potential 5-point cover off out the door. Now, to put that into perspective, Zach Wilson threw 3 interceptions all of last year. So this kid's not one that makes a lot of mistakes. Now, Tennessee's defense is nowhere near as talented as the Utah defense was that BYU faced last week. Tennessee was embarrassed at home last week. They got rolled by Georgia State. Usually that would put them in a perfect revenge spot, but I don't see that happening. Tennessee struggled big time at the line of scrimmage last week. They were dominated up front, both sides of the ball. If they couldn't control the line of scrimmage against Georgia State, How do you expect them to do so against a physical BYU team that likes to pound the ball offensively and just matched up pretty good with a talented Utah squad? You take away the two pick sixes last week, and BYU likely covers, like I said a second ago. I like the Cougars here actually to win this game on the road. I'm taking BYU plus 3.5. Last college game I'm going to bet this week, LSU at Texas. Current line, LSU minus 6.5. The line on this game has jumped dramatically. LSU originally opened up minus 3. Now, this is a completely different LSU team than we've seen in the past, mainly due to quarterback Joe Burrow. The Tigers opened the season running a spread offense, which is completely different than their usual boring, slow, plodding offensive attack. And it worked. LSU put up 55 points at home, easily covered the 27-point line last week. Now, something we are used to seeing is a tough, dominant LSU defense. That hasn't changed this year. LSU is expected to have one of the better defenses in college football. We can't really say the same about Texas on the defensive side. The Longhorns, they've got some talent on the offensive side of the ball. They looked good offensively last week. Defensively, they struggled against Louisiana Tech, in my opinion. Despite the large margin of victory, Texas gave up 454 yards of offense to a Louisiana Tech team. The Longhorns defense comes into this top 10 matchup against LSU with 8 new starters, which has to have LSU quarterback Joe Burrow foaming at the mouth, as the weakness of this Texas defense is in the secondary. Now, even though LSU has typically been a slow starter in recent years, they've only covered 4 of their last 15 games in September. I actually like them in this spot here. You know, like I said earlier, I really don't like taking road favorites, especially one that's almost a touchdown. I can't remember the last time LSU has had excitement at the quarterback position like this. It might have been since Jamarcus Russell. What was that, 2003, 2004? What I saw last week out of LSU was impressive, and we just haven't seen it in a long time. LSU packs a strong defense, and defense travels. We didn't see much of their run game last week. That's a bit concerning for me, but I feel like LSU will take advantage of the weak Texas secondary. Backing LSU here, minus the 6.5. All right, guys, that's it. I will be back Saturday, probably around lunchtime, with my NFL bets of the week. It's the first time we're going to do that this year. Cannot fucking wait for NFL Sunday. If you like this video, click the like button below. Click subscribe. I appreciate all the support. I will catch you on Saturday.